Taking a comprehensive look at the week's indie wrestling news so you don't have to, it's the PWP Weekly Newscast on PWPonderings.com with Chris GST and Des Delgadillo.
How's it going, listeners? Chris GST here, web admin for PWPonderings.com. This is the weekly newscast, January 31st, 2013. If this is the first time you're listening to us, what we normally do is break down the results from the weekend, talk about all the upcoming news in indie wrestling. And tonight, we actually have a very special guest. We recorded earlier an interview with Kerry Silken, former Ring of Honor owner, and quite a discussion. After some debating back and forth, Des and I, we decided to leave it in unedited. Just because Kerry, he goes off on quite a bit, a lot of topics, including the retrospective of Ring of Honor, Ring of Honor during HDNet, what he thinks the future of Ring of Honor is, and just a lot of other topics. And Des and I just didn't feel that it required any editing at all. Of course, I am joined by Des. So, Des Delgadillo, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing very well. I'm looking forward to the Kerry Silken interview. I'm looking forward for all of you to listen to the Kerry Silken interview, unscripted, unfiltered, uncensored. It was a great time, and I hope everybody enjoys it as much as I did.
For sure. And it was, we want to thank Kerry for his time. It's quite a good interview, so we're leaving you for that as the main event of this week's weekly newscast. So, Des, let's get right into it. There were some results this weekend that we're going to go through. Dragon Gate USA came out to California. Nice and bright and shiny. Maybe. Maybe not. But they came out for a triple shot. Two of the shows were pay-per-views. And the January 25th, the Friday show, is the Open the Golden Gate 2013. It is now live on WNLive.com. You can check that out on VOD. There was first open up with the Vendetta Pro Showcase. So we had the Vendetta Pro Triforce Championship. Little Cholo defeated El Escorpio de Combate, who was the champion, and SoCal Crazy to win the title. There was a 15-person battle royal where the winner won a title shot of their choice. Wrestling personified Rick Luxury won, and he chose his partner Matt Carlos to challenge for the Vendetta All-Pro Wrestling Unified Tag Team Championships. There was a match between Tsunami Sue and Caden Anthony versus the Ballard brothers, Shane and Shannon. I can't remember the last time, Des, I even mentioned their names. With their manager, Gold Digger, and it went to a no contest due to a double countout. Billy Blade, managed by Melissa Coates, or maybe Coates, I guess, not too sure there, defeated Famous B. Creepshow, a Brawlin' Bo Cooper, Sledge, J.D. Horror, defeated Parental Discretion, Mario Banks, Mike Menace, and Drake Younger. Then we got into the Dragon Gate USA part of the show. Samuel Del Sol defeated the debuting Eita. Eita comes from Dragon Gate. He's quite a young kid. We posted some hype videos and some matches of him on our Facebook page. Brian, Mr. Get My Shit in Cage, defeated Ray Rosas. With Larry Dallas and Trina Michaels of the scene, they were at ringside. Post-match, Cage accepted Larry and Trina's offer to a contract with The Scene. So hopefully that means we'll be seeing a lot more of Mr. Cage in DGUSA. In an Evolve standings match, and I know, Des, you were looking forward to this, so I'm actually going to ask your opinion on this. Chuck Taylor defeated AR Fox and John Davis to become the number one seed in the Evolve title tournament. So, Des, as we know, this kind of gives Chuck quite the advantage over the others when it comes to the tournament. What do you think of that? I mean, because Chuck Taylor, I mean, he's been, I don't know, he has always been in the hunt in terms of he's always been at the top or number two when it comes to Evolve in terms of the wins and loss standings. But, you know, there's just always that sense that he's, I don't know any other way to put this, not necessarily taking it as seriously as some might want. So what do you feel about him being the number one seed? How does that go into this Evolve kind of I guess, universe?
It's kind of a weird dynamic, you're right, because Chuck Taylor has always been kind of on top of the Evolve leaderboard. He's always been number one or number two, and of course the leaderboard has always been pretty important in Evolve in terms of wins and losses. But you're right, he has been kind of a comedy character, sort of goofing off with Swamp Monster and his Gentleman's Club. So it's kind of odd to have him, you know, being the number one seed and get the leg up in the tournament, but I don't know. Maybe we'll see a bit of a change in Chuck Taylor over the next couple of months or at WrestleCon, where he's actually got the opportunity to gun and become the first ever Evolve champion. I'm hoping that's where it goes, because as entertaining as the Chuck Taylor character is, I at least enjoy it. I'm hoping we get a much more serious side of Chuck Taylor, and I don't know. I don't know if he'll go on to win the title, but I mean, it'd be a great way. It'd be a great excuse to revamp his character.
And something that I didn't put in the show notes, but the two, I guess, losers of the match, Aaron Fox and John Davis, they're going to be facing off in the re-debut of FIP. So that's coming back. Full Impact Pro. We're going to have the information for you up on our Facebook page. You can go check that out. So it's just interesting, the fact that the two guys that lost are actually now going to be vying for another title within the WWE Live universe, and that's also going to be on iPay-per-view. So that's kind of interesting.
Everything burns.
Exactly. Okay, for next up, the Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jackson defeated Duff of Sami Callihan and Eric Cannon. Then there was a Vendetta Pro Showcase match, Kevin Devine versus Julian Cash. That went to a no contest due to John Davis interfering. I'm assuming he beat up both guys. So,
yeah,
I haven't watched it yet on VOD, but hopefully I will pretty soon. The Jimmys of Jimmy Susumu and Rio Jimmy Sato defeated Johnny Gargano, who is, of course, the Open the Freedom Gate champion, and Rich Swann. And then in the main event, John Morrison defeated Akira Tozawa in what was said to be quite a show-stealing match. Afterward, the Young Bucks attempted to beat down Morrison, but AR Fox came to the rescue. There was a video posted about that, and you will find that, of course, in our results. Of course, all the results that we list here on the show can be found on our website, pwponderings.com. If you look right down on the right-hand side, you will always find them, or just click on the button above that says Indie News. Same day, AAW out in Berwyn, Illinois, had Chaos Theory. And this was quite a big show for them. Unfortunately, some of the talent got snowed in and were not able to show up, so there were some changes to the card, and some would say for the better. There was a pre-show battle royal. Not entirely sure of the result of that match. Our very own senior editor, Jerome Cuson, was there live tweeting the results, so look for his review of the show coming up on the site, where most likely he will post the result of that. In the Heritage Title Tournament match results, there were four round matches here. This, of course, comes about where Michael Elgin earlier this year, he won the AEW Heavyweight title from Silas Young, but he was also the Heritage title champion at the time, and he was so for, I believe, a little over a year. So, of course, he couldn't defend both of them, and so it's been put up. So, the results of tonight were Matt Fitchett defeating Christian Abel, Davey Vega defeating Vic Capri, Kyle O'Reilly defeated TD or Tadarius Thomas, and ACH defeating Prince Ali in what was said to be probably the most outstanding match of the night, except for the main event. Very high praise. I have not seen a lot of Prince Ali, so I'm looking forward to checking this out. So those were your Heritage Title Tournament match results. The rest of the card, Mischief defeated Marcus Crane, who came out instead of Scarlett. Now, post-match, Mischief was laid out by Mason Beck. There was a four-team eliminator, Zero Gravity versus Titan, that is Lamar Titan, as many people know him, Tweak Phoenix, and then versus Jordan Francois McIntyre, who most people know him as Jordan McIntyre, but it was pointed out that he came out by himself. Zero Gravity won this match, and they became the number one contenders to the AEW tag titles. Jimmy Jacobs defeated Dan Lawrence. Silas Young and Michael Elgin for the heavyweight title was announced to occur in 2 weeks. I believe that is their Dirty Deeds event, and we have the information for that as well on our Facebook page. Keith Walker defeated Knight Wagner. There was a Kevin Harvey promo, which broke down into a big brawl between Boz, Linden, and Corbin, battling it out with Walker, Tweak, and Lamar Titan. The North Stash Express is going to go up against Keith Walker and Tweak Phoenix also in 2 weeks at Dirty Deeds. Okay, and then we were up to the main event, Shane Hollister and Silas Young versus Michael Elgin and Davey Richards. I mean, that match alone, with those four names, should excite anyone. And it had quite a controversial ending. Davey Richards kicked Elgin in the head, which led to Young taking the cover and getting the win. It was said it went about 28 minutes. So, not too sure where that's leading. But seems that Davey Richards kind of turned on Michael Elgin in AAW.
That fiend.
Exactly. And with guys like Shane Hollister and obviously Elgin's in what I would call tremendous series of matches with Silas Young, I think this is quite a big thing for AEW, and you guys should be checking them out in 2013.
And the MP4 is already available, is it not?
Yes, the MP4 is already available, as well as the DVD. Quite good stuff there. I mean, AEW really churning out some good products, and they're really trying to get them out faster to the fans and for people to check them out. We will be talking about that a little bit later when we discuss National Pro Wrestling Day. All right, DGUSA, again, this was January 26th in Huntington Park, California. This was Revolt 2013. Chuck Taylor defeated Eric Cannon. Brian Kendrick won the SoCal Fray. Of course, this was supposed to be a student of his, but Swerve, he entered himself. He defeated Drake Younger, Brian Cage, Famous B, Johnny Goodtime, Johnny Yuma, Ray Rosas, and B-Boy. Rich Swann defeated Eita. A.R. Fox defeated Samuel Del Sol. Akira Tozawa defeated Sammy Callahan. The Young Bucks defeated the Jimmies, Ryo Saito and Jimmy Susumu. And then in an Open the Freedom Gate No Rope, No DQ match, Johnny Gargano defeated John Davis to retain. He choked him out with a ladder. I have not gone to watch this yet, but it was reported by Brian live on the site, and we appreciate everyone that joined us for that. Crazy ending is all I can say.
It sounds fun.
It does. It really, and of course, this being, I mean, we don't see no rope matches very often, and we got to talk to Gabe about that. It's something I think a lot of fans should check out, and hopefully you guys will on iPay-Per-View. Last result of the weekend, DGUSA presented Heat 2013. That was January 27th in Huntington Park. Rich Swann defeated Eric Cannon. John Davis defeated Drake Younger. Chuck Taylor defeated Eita. Johnny Gargano defended his Open Freedom Gate title against Brian Kendrick. And that was because Brian Kendrick won the SoCal Fray the day before. Samuel Del Sol defeated Ryo Saito. Sammy Callahan defeated Jimmy Susumu. And in the main event, A.R. Fox and Akira Tozawa defeated the Young Bucks. That match alone must have been crazy. I'm looking forward to seeing that, Dez.
Yeah, there's a match on all three of these shows that I really want to go out of my way to see as I stumble over my words here, as usual. And I've heard lots of good things about Eita, so I'm really looking forward to see what comes of him and if he ever makes another journey back here to the U.S. and does some more matches, because I've heard a lot of good things about him thus far, and he's very young, so he can only get way better.
Yeah, I believe he's only 21, so yeah. Crazy. And hopefully we see him back here in the States. All right, that leaves us off from the results, and let's delve into some news, Dez. Okay, biggest news coming up, February 2nd, National Pro Wrestling Day. We're not going to go through the afternoon and evening cards. That will be provided for in the information for this podcast.
But they're loaded.
Exactly. These are loaded cards. Let me tell you guys. So we want to tell you, this is at the Derby Inc. Gardens in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So it takes place Saturday, February 2nd. You have no reason not to go if you're within distance to get there. There will be an afternoon show at 1 p.m. Eastern and an evening show at 7 p.m. Eastern. Admission to each event is completely free.
Wait. How much?
Free. The low price of nothing. You just got to get there. I mean, they're not going to pay your way, but if you can, you should get there. I would suggest getting there early because it is first come, first serve.
That's right.
But that is absolutely crazy. We will, however, have live coverage of it just because it will be on iPay-Per-View, and you can pre-order that now at smvod.com. Each event, the 1 p.m. afternoon and the 7 p.m. evening card, they're available separately at $9.99 each, or you can buy them together at $14.99, saving of $5. Why wouldn't you? I mean, these are just completely stacked cards. That information will be provided, as I said, in information for this website. Because if we had to announce each and every match, it'd be too much. We would never get out of here. We will say there's a lot of good tag matches, presentations from promotions such as Beyond Wrestling, Wrestling is Art, Wrestling is Heart. PWInsider.com is presenting a Rey de Voladores-style tournament that takes place on both the afternoon and evening card. Lots of good stuff. Guys like Cole Cabana, Mike Quackenbush, The Briscoe, Steve Carino, Jimmy Jacobs, Ethan Page, Josh Alexander.
More guys.
There's a lot of people on this card.
I'll tell you, if you've been looking to get into some new kinds of pro wrestling and you just don't know where to start, Are you listening to this podcast trying to get a flavor for what you should check out next on Smart Mark Video or on High Spots? These two pay-per-views are the way to go, and if you're in Philadelphia, why not check it out live for free? This is the way to get a sample of all the different wrestling out there, because almost every promotion I can think of in the United States has a spot on this show, and they're giving a showcase match away for free, so why not check it out? It's going to be awesome.
And as we talked about with Kerry, Ring of Honor is also holding TV tapings. Same day, February 2nd, that is, of course, at Maryland in the DuBrunz Arena. It does not interfere with the afternoon card of National Pro Wrestling Day, in which the Briscoes are defending their Ring of Honor tag titles against Steve Corino and Jimmy Jacobs. So they will most likely also be at the TV taping. So
you're going to hightail it from Philly to Maryland.
Pretty much. Okay. I Google mapped it. It's an hour and 44 minutes away, so kind of interesting in terms of holding it, but, you know, I mean, maybe they just couldn't book the arena any other day. But yeah, that is, it's still overall, it's going to be a great day, National Pro Wrestling Day. And of course, check out our exclusive giveaway of two, one Chikara, one Ring of Honor box set from Filsinger Games.
Yeah.
We've teamed up with them. It's a giveaway. You can still enter on Twitter. The information will be provided for. Check that out. All you got to do is tweet a phrase. That's all you have to do to enter. And I have been studiously keeping a list of every single person. I promise I have not missed you. Every day when I wake up in the morning, I check the comments section for our Twitter page. So I have not missed a single person. The list just continues to get longer and longer. And we thank everyone that is getting involved. We obviously are doing this to promote National Pro Wrestling Day and also give away a pretty awesome card game. If you're into cards and you're into collectible kind of stuff, this is the contest for you. Unfortunately, I can't enter. Dez, you're still eligible.
Am I really?
You are.
Oh, I should enter and beat all of you. And then play my game live on the podcast just to mess with your heads.
Yes.
Yes. I'll play with myself.
Yes. Anyway.
Segway, Chris. Do something.
Segway, exactly. National Pro Wrestling Day. Check that out. Check out our contest. Lots of fun there. All right, we're moving on to PWG, Mind's blown here, Dez. The announcement of All-Star Weekend 9.
My brain exploded when I looked at Twitter a couple days ago.
Exactly. They announced it is the weekend of Friday, March 22nd and Saturday, March 23rd. Night 1, the main event has already been announced. It is a guerrilla warfare match between Drake Younger and Sami Callihan. There are talents that are debuting, and there are talents that are coming back. I'm going to go through the talents that are coming back first. Paul London, returning to PWG for the first time in over 2 years. Of course, the PWG World Champion Adam Cole, the World Tag Team Champions, the Young Bucks, Chuck Taylor, Kevin Steen, Roderick Strong, Eddie Edwards, Willie Mack, the Unbreakable Fucking Machines of Brian Cage and Michael Elgin, the Inner City Machine Guns of Ricochet and Rich Swann, and the Super Smash Brothers, Player Uno and Player Dos. How can you not be excited?
A loaded enough card.
Exactly. And now we get into... there are debuts, Dez. Think of this. Debuts in PWG. I mean, it almost blows my mind thinking about how these guys never been in.
Yeah.
But this is how this works. We're going to start out with Jay Lethal, AR Fox, Johnny Gargano, Samuro Del Sol, and the former Trent Beretta of WWE, Trent ? They are all debuting, and of course, I'm assuming there could be even more names announced. I don't know how, because this just seems like a loaded weekend.
We're still like a month away. We could have some groundbreaking news in the next couple of days, too. It's crazy.
Exactly. Now, final topic of the evening, Combat Zone Wrestling leading into their 14th anniversary show, which is also a double shot with WSU. We were lucky enough to have a podcast with Drew Cordero, who is the owner of WSU Women's Wrestling. And you can check that out, obviously, on iTunes or on Stitcher. I will also provide the information for that. But the news that they announced January 29th, they're splitting from Pancoast Productions. That is the parent company of HybridEnd.tv, which, of course, was the iPay-per-view vendor for CZW. So kind of interesting where this came about. We're not too sure. Both sides seemingly have been very, shall we say, pleasant about it.
Yeah, they've been cordial about the split.
Yeah, on Twitter they've both announced, hey, you know, it's been amicable. We really just, you know, going in two different directions at this point. So I don't think anything really controversial about this. It's just that CZW was, I mean, for a long time on HybridEnt.tv. So interesting to see where they're going to go from there. You know, obviously CZW will be on WN Live during WrestleCon. So that's, I mean, you know, I'm not saying that they are going to continue with WrestleCon. I mean, at WrestleCon with WN Live, I'm not saying they're going to continue with using them as an iPay-per-view holder. But in terms of distribution, as of right now, they had to cancel their Ultraviolet Underground event.
Yeah.
So that's kind of unfortunate, but of course we at PWP, we wish CZW the best and hope that they go forward. We're always very happy with the relationship that we've partnered up with them. So that's kind of interesting. And this, of course, going in as they go to their 14th anniversary. I mean, Dez, that's not something you hear a lot on the indie scene.
An independent company like CZW has been around, yes, for 14 years, putting on a very unique brand of pro wrestling. And it's very cool to see them turn 14 years old, and they have a really stacked card that we'll get into in the coming weeks here on this podcast. But I was taking a look at the CZW card, and it looks pretty darn good for a, you know, especially for a 14th anniversary show. And their split, I mean, just the announcement itself from Pancos Productions, it you know, it doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it's fun to you know, this is the kind of thing that leads people to speculate, and you know. Like you said, there's nothing, no concrete proof. This is just us sort of thinking about it. And they have had a bit of a relationship with WWN Live in the past, and they will be a part of WrestleCon. So, I mean, we'll see where things go. But it'd be pretty cool to see CZW a permanent fixture of WWN Live.
And I do want to note that the event takes place February 9th. It is their 14th anniversary. It's a deadly doubleheader with Women Superstars Uncensored. That is WSU. Check out the podcast I got to do with Drew Cordero of that. Lots of fun, lots of good stuff, and some breaking news on it. Obviously, if you've already listened to it, not so much. But if you haven't, check it out. It's a really fun conversation that I had with Drew, not just about WSU and the CZW event, but also the future of women's wrestling. Of course, as I said, he is the owner and doing a lot of stuff with it. You know, we're talking about the advantages of YouTube, the ways that he luckily has a unique relationship with YouTube in terms of what he's able to get out with it. Because Drew has been with YouTube, I'm going to say, I think even before Google bought YouTube. So he's been advertising and utilizing them for videos with Beyond Wrestling and other projects for a long, long time. So there's a lot of things that Drew does with YouTube that you just don't see with any other indie promotion. So check that out. Of course, as Dez said, we'll be talking about the card as it comes up, most likely next week. But it is February 9th, so keep that in mind. It is a doubleheader. The WSU card begins at 4 p.m., and the CZW show starts at 7:30. All right, Dez, do you have any other thoughts? Anything else you want to discuss before we dive right into the interview with Kerry Silken?
I want to dive right into the interview with Kerry Silken.
All right, awesome. As always, we definitely appreciate all of it. Check it out. Leave us your thoughts after the interview. It's, you know, as I said, Dez and I talked about it. Because there's a lot of stuff that Kerry talks about. So we decided, hey, you know what? Kerry said it, and he pretty much said, you know, he asked us, are you going to edit this? And we said no. So we didn't. So check that out. Hope you enjoy it, and we'll talk to you right after. How's it going, listeners? Chris GST, web admin for pwponderings.com. Here again, we have a very special guest on the line. I couldn't do this on my own, so I brought along Dez. Dez, how are you doing, sir?
I wouldn't let you do things by your own, Chris. I'm here with you to talk to our awesome guest this evening.
For sure. We're here with one of our most esteemed guests. He is a former owner of Ring of Honor, Kerry Silken. Kerry, how are you doing tonight?
Very well, and thank you for having me on tonight.
Well, we definitely appreciate the time you're giving us. Dez, I just want to start real quick. So, short history lesson. I have been a Ring of Honor fan since its inception. I started the Ring of Honor Live Journal community, which at one point was listed on the Ring of Honor website. This was back in 2002 when it started, and pretty much just been a fan ever since then. Dez, if you could just let our listeners know a little bit, when did you start?
I actually started late, and I was a late bloomer for the Ring of Honor era. And then thanks to Ring of Honor's website and all sorts of DVDs, I went all the way back to the beginning. But I actually discovered how great Ring of Honor was in 2009 when Ring of Honor started doing internet pay-per-views. And that's sort of how I got hooked into it. And then I kind of went back through a bit of a time capsule, I guess, and went all the way back to 2002. So I've been entrenched in Ring of Honor ever since, writing reviews for their TV show and all sorts of Ring of Honor content. So Ring of Honor has definitely left a huge impression on me as a wrestling fan and the way I look at pro wrestling.
For sure. And obviously, all of our listeners and all of us reading the site, we want to thank you, Kerry, because you have pretty much started a revolution in wrestling. Of course, when Ring of Honor first started in 2002, there was the first management team. And then in 2003, the rebirth of Ring of Honor started. And that's where we're going to start, Kerry. When you first thought of you bought into Ring of Honor and you knew, well, possibly you didn't know what Ring of Honor would turn into, but obviously you had great hopes for it. Otherwise, why would you have put your backing behind it? When you first saw, I guess, the product and what you thought it could be, what were those thoughts going through your head?
Like most people that I've met that are involved in the wrestling business, whether it's guys like yourselves, wrestlers themselves, management people, photographers, whatever, various people, technical sides of it, 99.9% of the people started out as fans. Very few guys in the business, and I could go down a list of wrestlers. There's like one or two that I could name that were legitimately not fans that happened to morph into the business. But anyway, we're not going to talk about them. We're going to talk about the rest of us. And that was me. I was a longtime wrestling fan. And I followed wrestling since time I was a kid, which is a long time ago compared to you guys. We're talking about, I started watching wrestling in the late 60s. As a little kid, and I followed it, I always followed it, very, very quietly, because it wasn't very cool, I had to find select friends that would put up with my wrestling, my wrestling fandom, but anyway.
So things haven't really changed.
No. It was totally the same. It was almost an embarrassment to go into a store to buy a wrestling magazine. There was a few kids that liked it. We used to go all the time to the garden. I lived in the New York area, so we would go to the garden and to other shows. And I don't know if you guys know this, but I got involved in the wrestling business. It's a long story, but I'm going to give you a really fast version. I was involved in a wrestling magazine that was exclusively printed in Puerto Rico in 2000 and 2001, 2002. I have a close friend of mine who was a writer, and he was a rock and roll writer, and still is as well. He did a little wrestling stuff, and we just had this crazy idea. And we did it, and that quote-unquote put me in the business. Simultaneously, I knew some of the guys who were getting started with the Ring of Honor project from going to ECW, right? I was an ECW fan. Yeah. I was an ECW fan before they, before Heyman came there, when Eddie Gilbert was there. And I went to some of those early shows. And ECW, a magazine was going on, barely. ECW closed. Dave and his friends started Ring of Honor, I knew these guys from ECW, from going to the shows, and I got involved, and we won't go into the rest of the history of what happened, but the rest is history, and I wound up owning the company.
Yeah, and Dez and I were talking offline, and as Dez just mentioned, he really started watching in 2009, so this quite a bit of history, and Dez, I'm not trying to insult you, but there's a lot of history for Ring of Honor. So, Kerry, I don't know how any other way to say this, but in my opinion, Ring of Honor really changed the landscape and the way indie wrestling was presented in terms of the style and the presentation. And yes, I know that probably some of our listeners are like, oh no, there was King of the Indies, there was the ECWA Super 8, But really, when you think about the types of matches that Ring of Honor was putting on, especially when you had guys like Samoa Joe and Homicide, which really started that reborn phase of Ring of Honor, that hard-hitting style was just, in my opinion, tremendous. Now, as you noted, you were a fan back in the 60s, you know, so you saw guys like Bruno, and how did you feel about that difference of style?
Well, I liked the product, and, you know, as a wrestling fan, as a fan, going back, we'll take it back to, you know, ECW, they you know, ECW at its peak, my peak for ECW was, you know, when not only they were doing the, you know, heavy-duty, hardcore stuff, you also had, you know, Malenko and Jericho and all those good, you know, there were
like
so many
Scorpio.
Good guys, there was Benoit, and, you know, there was such good wrestling, it was such a mixture, and they would do, you know, that early Paul Heyman era, they would, you know, do things that, you know, the big companies will say were, you know, scared to do or just mm-hmm. didn't want to go to those lengths. And, you know, I liked that a lot. And, you know, Gabe Sapolsky was there, and, you know, he's very bright as far as, you know, his booking and his, you know, and he saw this also. So when I got involved, I liked what was going on as far as, you know, the product and, you know, the fans were not, you know, the fans weren't getting shortchanged. But what I didn't like was, you know, I'm a rock and roll guy too. I'm not a rock and roll star, but I've always been a rock and roll fan. And I'm also, you know, been in the entertainment business as far as being on the end of the ticket business. And I had a short career many years ago doing lighting and on a small level, theatrical and for bands on a small level. But that was missing. And you could have Samoa Joe and Christopher Daniels and Brian Danielson and these kick-ass guys, but it looked like shit. And I pushed to have, let's make this look a little better. It's going to be a DVD product. And if you go to a concert, I don't give a shit if it's Metallica, Pearl Jam, Garth Brooks, or the Foo Fighters, or Barry Manilow, when the concert starts, what happens? The lights go out, right?
Absolutely.
And that was missing. And we were not going to rival Monday Night Raw or TNA or whomever. It was, you know, on a way smaller scale. But nevertheless, I wanted this to be a show. This is a presentation, you know, and I added that, you know, I remember Gabe was like, oh, you know, well, we don't need that and all this, but, you know, he changed his mind quickly when he saw it. And, you know, we had, you know, a little rock and roll to it. And even though it was on a very rudimentary kind of basis, it looked good. And, you know, the lights went out and there were ring lights and there was a little bit of entrance lights, and as, you know, the years went on, I'm talking about the early years of 04, 05, we added little stuff, and it looked really good. And I think that's something that's not spoken about enough. I also had the idea of bringing in the metal, you know, I used to watch Raw, and they had years ago they had no guardrails, way back. Then years ago they had guardrails. Then Raw started with the black rails around. It's like, you know, foam almost. Like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And so I thought, why don't we have metal rails? And, you know, I really wasn't thinking about the people banging on them, but let's get the name, you know, the ROH logo all around. And, you know, it morphed into those metal guardrails that people like to bang, and it was just like this synergy. You know, sometimes 1 + 1 = 3, and you don't know what's going to happen. So you add all that together, plus the great wrestling, and, you know, the right guys at the right time, and you get that synergy that, you know, things happen. And I think that was the combination that, you know, really happened that, you know, got things moving along that people don't really talk about that much when they look at it like that.
Right, and I think a lot of...
I hope that made sense, that whole thing.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely it made sense. I mean, because, you know, I think about what you're saying, and I think back, okay, so Ring of Honor, you started with the black ring.
Watch a Ring of Honor tape from 2002, and
yes,
watch one from 2005.
Oh, God, I mean, it's a complete difference. You see the...
Right. Right.
The Ring of Honor apron, you know, half black, half red, with the Ring of Honor logo right there.
Right.
Or
yeah,
the
lights go out, the entrance lights, you know, and once again, we're not going to compete with Vince McMahon, but it looked okay.
I think it looked good.
It gave that feel that you were at a show, and, you know, it made it special. You know, when you go to Metallica, and, or whomever you might like to go to,
I'll take Metallica.
Well, we'll take whatever, whether it's Metallica, Coldplay, or whoever you might like, Madonna. There'll be a point in the show where I'm just talking out my ass here, but there's a point in the, but I'm not. There's a point in the show where, let's just say, there's one burst of yellow lighting and all swing in at this one key moment of this one drum break, and it happens for 1 second, and then all of a sudden there's another break and everything turns blue, and then there's, you know, everything's white. Now, nobody in that crowd goes, wow, the yellow to the blue to the white, but they know something happened, and they, you know, it's just like a pop because it goes with the music and it's a special moment. And, you know, so it's like, nobody was sitting there going like, oh, wow, look at the red lights when Homicide's lighting, when he would come out, would be all red. Or, you know, the various minor effects we could get, you know, with what we could do. But, you know, it added to the whole vibe. And that's, you know, if you watch the tapes, it comes across in some of them.
No, I agree. It always came across as something special, especially when you had like a guest star from Japan or England or anywhere. I mean, you had the lights going off, and as you said, any effects you guys could just make it feel special. You would darken the whole arena except for the spotlight, like when Danielson came out, and people knew,
right,
this is special. This is
and you know, what else was special was, of course, this talent. And, you know, it was just great talent and great special attractions along the way, whether they were, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, old timers, you know, special guests, even non-wrestling kind of guys. I mean, meaning like, you know, Paul Bearer making an appearance, or Bobby Heenan, or whomever it might be in a one shot, you know, it was Dusty or Terry Funk, or, you know, how do you go wrong with that being added into this, you know, great crew of young, hungry guys that are just, you know, and there was a very intense, there was just this ethic that everybody, you know, it was a good atmosphere, and where it wasn't a lot of backstabbing, but everybody wanted to, you know, it was a team effort, and that, guys wanted to, you know, not one up each other, but, you know, add to, you know, it's a conglomerate. When you go to a good wrestling show, it's like going to a good concert, and, you know, using the concert comparison again, you don't go to see the some band and they just hit you with, you know, their top. It's got to be a roller coaster ride, and get slower points and different things happen. And the same with a good wrestling show. And I think we created that for many years.
Kerry, Ring of Honor...
And we still do.
That's right. Kerry, I the presentation has definitely, you know, if you look back, like you said, from a tape from 11 years ago and look back at something from more recent, it's definitely improved significantly and for the better. But you add to that, Ring of Honor, I've always called, from when it started, I thought of it as the little company that could, in that it has always attracted a specific niche audience, and the audience has grown over the years, obviously. But at the time when Ring of Honor launched, I feel it launched at a very opportune time when the internet was just sort of taking hold and wrestling fandom was sort of transitioning over to the internet. Do you attribute at all? I mean, obviously the internet is a big source of revenue for Ring of Honor now with internet pay-per-views and merchandise sales. At the very beginning, when the internet was becoming the source of buzz for professional wrestling, how big do you think that was for Ring of Honor at the time, and how much has that improved in the last 10 years?
It was absolutely essential, and I probably didn't even realize it as much as, I don't think anybody did, but that was, that was our outlet, that was our TV, that was everybody's, and it was also at a time, when the company started, when, ECW had folded. Ring of Honor was based out of the Philly area. It really wasn't planning to go too much beyond that. And, when I got involved full-time and there was some success and, this internet buzz was absolutely, we wouldn't have been able to do anything without it. So, yeah, you're 1,000% right, it kept the, it kept the company, it put us on the map, and we were able to go to places that we never dreamed. I mean, the first time the company went to, even to Boston, it was a big deal, let alone, going to these other cities, whether it be Dayton or Chicago, and let alone going to, the UK twice.
That's right. Frontiers of Honor.
And to Japan twice, as well as, making Canada a regular stop in the Ring of Honor, tours. Nobody ever thought that would happen. But, like I said, there was this synergy of the fan base, the product, the internet. People wanted an alternative to what they were getting. And, it just happened. And the talent was great. We were blessed with great talent, great guys. And we lost, like the attrition rate that happens in wrestling that is always going to happen because that's the way it is. And they put a fork in the company many times. Oh, you lost this guy. You lost that guy. Oh, now what? And it just opened spaces for other people and, to rise, to elevate, to become stars. And, that still exists today. And it's really exciting to, to watch the Royal Rumble last night and to see Claudio and to see Tyler. And, not to mention, of course, Punk and Brian and other guys that have been through, WWE or had little runs and, when we lost guys, other guys gave them opportunities and, that's just our position. And a company like, Ring of Honor, it's always going to be our position, until, unless there's like a major change happening, over the next few years or something. But that's just the way it is.
Right. I mean, it is just the natural order, quote unquote, if there is such a thing of business and how that works. And you guys always just kind of landed on your feet and even went beyond that. I mean, I remember when there was the exodus and, the relations between Ring of Honor and TNA weren't at the greatest and, for various reasons. But the talent stepped up. And as you said, it always, for Ring of Honor, I think for a lot of our listeners and for me as well, is just always the talent that came through and made Ring of Honor what it is. Okay, I guess the other part I want to ask about is you, and I'm not going to say you guys, obviously you weren't like the first ones, but you brought over talent from Japan and really integrated them into your, call it the Ring of Honor universe. We're talking like Kenta and Morishima was champion, and guys like Marufuji were just really dominating Ring of Honor. And that time period, Kerry, that had to be – I want to ask you, was it exciting? I mean, clearly it was exciting, but how exciting was it to have these international stars, but also putting them into a universe that it was pretty much sink or swim because a lot of them didn't speak English.
It was crazy. I mean, I remember having our first meetings with the guys from NOAA. And, you know, NOAA, these are gentlemen and wonderful people to work with. And, you know, they wanted a presence in the U.S. And we, you know, it's like, you know, luck plays a part in it, too, where we were lucky that they didn't have a very, for whatever reason, WWE didn't want to deal with them, and TNA, they weren't dealing with them also. So they liked our product, and they had been bringing some guys over who'd worked for Ring of Honor. So they were interested in, you know, coming here. For them at the time, it was just not to our advantage, but it was to help them because they would, you know, they felt having their stars wrestle in the United States for Ring of Honor and then showing those matches in Japan, you know, because, you know, the United States was still considered a, important place, you know, to wrestle. And, so it worked for both companies. And, but to get to deal with those guys, it was like, in the beginning, it was like, you know, wow, you know, can't believe it, you know, and, they were so cool to work with and such nice people. And hopefully, we're not done with, you know, with NOAA. We'll see what happens. I don't want to speak for the company. As far as from a management standpoint, but you know, you never know what's going to happen. And but my time with them was great, and the talent. I mean, we don't have to talk about, you know, Kenta, Marufuchi, Morishima having the belt was thrilling. And then, you know, the big payoff was getting to, you know, go to Japan, you know, twice, you know, working with them as well as Dragon Gate. And, you know, but NOAA was the ones that, you know, orchestrated everything to get us over there. We couldn't have done it without them. You know, we're not going to be able to sell tickets for Japan. You know, so the first time we went there, both companies helped us, you know, to do the shows. And, you know, it was very, very, very exciting. And you know, the matches with these guys, you know, Kenta and Brian, and, you know, I mean, there's so many of them. And, you know, having Kibashi come over, you know, and Samoa Joe, that classic, that was like, you know, I mean, you guys are too young, but that was like, you know, Muhammad Ali against Joe Frazier. You know, that was like the big fight match with that real feel. And, you know, Morishima and Marufuchi, there were so many good matches, and dealing with these guys was a pleasure, you know, and it was a great, you know, it was a great experience at that time. And, you know, I it's funny, I don't really watch a lot of the old, once in a while I do, but you know, when you see these, you know, when you see it, they're really historic.
Absolutely. And I mean, I'm talking about, you know, Glory by Honor, and just having Misawa in a Ring of Honor ring, and just moments like that that just, I think for the fans, was
I didn't even
tremendous.
Mention Misawa in my, this is how many guys he had, you know, not to mention Liger, and you know, it's just been amazing, you know, and, but yeah, it's like, there's just, it's been a thrill, you know, and it's like, so sometimes I don't have to look back at, like, you know, match by, you know, show by show, match by match, and see some of the things that, you know, we did, you know, under my ownership. And it was a lot of good stuff there.
For sure, Kerry. I mean, you have a lot to be proud of. One of my favorite shows of all time, we're just talking about wrestling in general, not just Ring of Honor, is Final Battle 2003. You had the partnership with All Japan at the time. You had Kojima in the ring. You had Great Muto. It's a show that I cherish having. But Dez, you know, we've kind of caught up to around 2009, what some refer to as the HD Net series, you know, when, you know, having guys like Morishima as champion and Kenta on American TV, that's a big time. So Dez, I really want to get your thoughts since this is kind of the time that you became a Ring of Honor fan.
I did. I started catching up with the HD Net show, got driven to the internet pay-per-views. And I mean, HD Net, Kerry, I want to get your take on the HD Net and just its initial launch, because the HD Net channel at the time was very much a part of the MMA world, presenting its own series of MMA fights and its own little promotion. And when it was announced that Ring of Honor would get a slot on HD Net, it sort of felt apropos that Ring of Honor, even back then, was obviously a very hard-hitting promotion, and if an MMA fan wanted to watch pro wrestling and still sort of feel at home, I kind of felt like Ring of Honor was that company for that person to watch. So was that?
It was the right, you know, it was the right fit, and the guys from HD Net were really good to us, and I don't want to say anything negative. You know, the only problem was that they just didn't have enough exposure at the time, where, you know, they were on enough cable networks where it, you know, it made a huge difference for us. But, you know, they were really behind the product. And, you know, it was those guys more than it was me, you know, to get that deal done. And it's just unfortunate that, you know, I mean, they're a successful channel, and who am I to say anything regarding Mark Cuban not being a successful man, right?
So, or any of us to say anything,
right? Yeah. Right. You know, but as far as at that time, the show was good. They were at a funny spot with the cable companies, and it's just, you know, if they'd have been positioned, you know, better, I think we would have, you know, benefited a lot more from it, but it just wasn't that way. But, you know, it gave us a hell of a platform. Whomever saw the shows, you know, it put it, you know, it was there we were, you know, before and after Monday Night Raw, if you could get us.
Yeah, and I would say, I mean, I have all 10 of Ring of Honor and HD Net volumes, and man, you put those matches up against anything else in wrestling in TNA or WWE at that time period, it holds up and exceeds it. I mean, it's just, I feel that Ring of Honor for a time period, and maybe, you know, we can talk, you know, that's between 04 up to 08. I mean, there was a time when all that was carrying me as a wrestling fan in general was Ring of Honor. And I think a lot of pundits have said very similar things, because at the time, TNA and WWE, they weren't at the peak of what they could be. So there was definitely time, even though not a lot of people got to see it on HDNet, which is now Access TV, but it still carried, there was a lot of weight to the matches. Dez, you know, from that time period, since you do the recaps for Wrestling Observer and obviously other websites, what were your thoughts on the product? And obviously, Kerry, I think you have a lot of, you should have a lot of pride in that time.
Well, at the time, Ring of Honor, to me, just catching on HD Net every week, I got hooked immediately. I had always been a fan of TNA's X Division, and obviously all of the X Division stars came from Ring of Honor. So I went back and I watched all those matches from Ring of Honor, the past, you know, the stuff that you were talking about, Chris, and the forays into Japan and with Japanese superstars and the forays into the UK. And I just immediately became hooked on Ring of Honor. And I got driven to the Final Battle show in 2009, which I believe was the first internet pay-per-view for Ring of Honor. And from then on, the relationship, just watching that hard-hitting style, which to me was totally new because I had not at that point been really a fan of any independent wrestling. It was strictly WWE, TNA, and Lucha Libre. And from that point on, just the love affair between myself and Ring of Honor, it sort of began, and it's it has not fizzled out. So.
Well, they were on. I mean, Kerry, I mean, speak about this. You guys did do, I guess, what we could call the traditional pay-per-view. You know, I watched you guys on DirecTV and on Dish when I had it.
Those were great shows.
Yeah,
those are fantastic shows.
You know, and they did, you know, those shows were the ones that were on non-live, non-pay-per-view is in a more traditional pay-per-view sense, except that it wasn't live because we just could not afford to do
right,
that.
Right, it was on demand. So
it was on demand, and in the beginning it was on, you could get it on most cable networks. You couldn't get it on DirecTV. In Demand was one of them. It was on the Dish Network.
Yeah, I know it was on Dish because I got it on Dish. So.
Most people could get it. It was a bummer that we couldn't get it on HD DirecTV immediately. Be that as it may, those shows. This is no bullshit. I could tell you that, and I'm not looking to knock any other company, but we did better numbers than TNA with some of their live pay-per-views currently. and it was cumulative over, and it wasn't like blow away, but, there were numbers that added up to 10, 12, 15,000 buys over the course of the time.
Right.
And, it didn't sustain that number, but they did in the beginning. And it was a lot of fun doing them and, trying it. Was it a success? It's hard to make money in this business, and the wrestling, there's only one man making money in this business. And you know where he lives, and it's in Connecticut. And that's
exactly.
It. That's it. That's it. You can,
you slice it, I mean, it's
right.
Just
the new management at Ring of Honor, Sinclair Broadcasting, their heart is in the right place, and their mindset's in the right place, and there's going to be growing pains, and I know when I sold the company. I felt that I was at least selling it to people that, have the best interests, and they do. And, it's still going to need some time to, for lack of a better way to put it, to shake out. And they're feeling their way through it, too. Joe Koff's a good guy, and he's vested in this, and it's a tough business. So, what you've seen in the last year and a half, there's been some hiccups, ups and downs, but I think it's going to level out, and I enjoy still being involved with the product, and I feel like I'm watching it continue to grow.
Well, I know Dez has a lot of questions about your sale to Sinclair, but I just want to kind of get this out of the way, because to me this is the elephant in the room. Because we recently were able to talk to Nigel McGuinness about his DVD that just came out. And, Kerry, you were there when Nigel was first hired at Ring of Honor. And now, obviously, he's working back with Ring of Honor in a rather different position. He's no longer in the ring. But how does – I mean, for you, is it kind of – I don't need to know any other way to put this. But when Nigel came back to Ring of Honor, it felt to me like a guy coming home. And he's expressed his opinions on it, and now he's in a rather different position. He's the matchmaker, he's the authority figure. But, you've known Nigel, obviously, practically the majority of his United States career. How is it working with him, seeing him back in, what I want to call his home promotion?
Well, I mean, if you're asking on a personal level, I mean, I love him being there,
Yeah, I do mean, on that personal level, excluding the TV and stuff.
Well, I mean, on a personal level, I love him being there, and he's, it's unfortunate, and he'll be the first to tell you that, his career was, his wrestling career was cut short, but be that as it may, his career is not cut short, and, he's still involved, and it's like, he's a great asset, to have there. He's a great character and a representative of the product and an on-air figure as, and being a matchmaker and being involved, throwing in his two cents, you know, which we all get to do. It's really nice. And, you know, I have nothing, you know, it's like over the years working with these various people, whether it's, you know, Brian Danielson or the stars, you know, some guys you're friendly with, some guys you're like, hey, what's up, and that's it, and other guys you hang out with a little, and Nigel's one of the guys that I've gotten to know and spend some time with, and I could say he's a friend, and it's great to have him around, and he's got a great mind, you know, and he's always thinking, and he likes to suggest things, whether people want to hear it or not. And I'm not saying as you know, where he's pushy or anything, but you know, he's got his opinions on what people want to see, and he has a right to voice it. And it's really good to have him there.
So, Kerry, I do want to talk a little bit about the fallout here from HDNet. And I think it caught a lot of people by surprise when the HDNet program was officially canceled. And I made obviously a lot of fans who really enjoyed that program. It really disappointed us. And then a few months later, the announcement came that you were selling to Sinclair. Did one eventually affect the other? Was the idea of getting another television show on Sinclair, was that sort of the straw that broke the camel's back in a sense and had you eventually sell?
Not really. I mean, I was a one-man band here with Ring of Honor, you know, as far as, you know, backing it. And if you know, we were doing, you know, I learned a long time ago from a very wise man in wrestling, Dutch Mantel, and he'd say to me, this is when we're doing our magazine in Puerto Rico, and he was booking. I don't know if you guys know who Dutch is, but he was.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh yes, we are aware of Dirty Dutch.
Great wrestler in his day.
Absolutely.
Great wrestler, a phenomenal booker, had a tremendous career, not only in Memphis, but in Puerto Rico. He booked IWA Puerto Rico, which had an incredible run. That's why we did our magazine, 2000, 2005. Then went to TNA. He's been around. And Dutch used to say, everything is not always what it seems. And, you know, everything's not always what it seems. And, you know, I was just in a position where, you know, I had to make a move with the company. You know, it wasn't sensible as a businessman to continue doing this. You know, if it was making money, and I was enjoying it, and I could sustain it, fine. But, you know, it wasn't at that level. So I was basically looking to make a move. The HDNet, losing HDNet and me getting, you know, finding Sinclair, having Sinclair being interested just sort of happened. It was just, it really had no bearing on one or the other. I guess in the end it was better that it happened that way in that order. But they were interested regardless, so it didn't affect it. That's the answer.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think Dez, that kind of is the overarching.
I can't be any more honest than I'm being.
Yeah. No, that covers it very well.
Dez had like three or four questions, and pretty much you covered all of them in that answer. Because, you know, we were also kind of, and Dez and I were talking about this off air for a little bit, in that, you know, when you, as you put it, kind of became a more prominent position in Ring of Honor in 2003. Did you have that vision of, I mean, obviously you had high hopes for the Ring of Honor product. The DVD was, you know, DVDs were selling, you know, and you know, there are, you know, numbers out there and whatever. But did you, when you envisioned it, did you ever think Ring of Honor, you know what, I'm going to put this on TV? Did that even broach the idea?
No, not at all. Nope. It just, everything just sort of, you know, it was that synergy kind of thing. Things just happened along the way. And, you know, we were approached by HDNet at one point. We were, you know, and same with the original pay-per-views. We were approached by somebody, and I'll gamble. I like to think of no guts, no glory, right?
Exactly. You have to take the risk, and why not?
And at what cost is the question? At the time, I was able to, it was a sensible business decision to try it, and it continued to be a relatively sensible business decision. But as time went on, it wasn't looking that way, and I needed help, and there was no, so either I would find someone to buy the company, or maybe have to get out, and that had been the end. So it was much better to be able to sell Ring of Honor, keep the product alive, keep the name going, keep the legacy, continuing, and here we sit on late January of 2013.
Yes, sir.
And we're still here.
Hey, and it's
and alive and well, may I say.
And a great ambassador to Ring of Honor, might I add.
Well, exactly. It's a testament to Ring of Honor in the sense that, and I like to equate Ring of Honor to the comedian Louis C.K. in that he took a risk and he put out one of his products online. He knows about piracy and all. It's technology has changed in the last 10, 11 years, and you really have to find a different way to put out your product. And I know that there may be some surrounding negativity about what a Ring of Honor is, and I think that only comes from the people like me and like Dez who have been fans for a while, and we may be, and I kind of think of us putting it in, we look through rose-colored glasses, but now Ring of Honor, to me anyway, and Kerry, feel free to disagree with me 100%, but I feel that it's a different product now. It's no longer a DVD product, it's a television product, and for my money, Ring of Honor still puts on some of the best TV when you compare it to some of the other products that are out there. And as you said, Sinclair has bought it. Obviously, they have a little bit more control over it, and you are still you're still on board. And as we were saying off air, I hope to see you at Supercard of Honor this year.
Well, you will see me. You just got to show up.
Definitely.
Their intentions are, it's a big corporation, and I'm not going to speak on their behalf, but they're vested in the product, and that's the main thing. You could slice and dice this thing to death, and websites and message boards and all this bullshit, and nobody knows what's really going on. They want to talk about what's going on or think they know what's going on, but like Dutch said, everything is not what it seems, and they don't know. And nobody knows how hard it is to sustain. I listened to the interview with Gabe that you guys did, which was good. And Gabe himself.
Well, let me say, Kerry, I appreciate that. I don't mean to interrupt you, but that is.
No, very, Gabe himself said referenced. That there was only a few Evolve shows and, less than he would have liked. And it's like with the wrestling economy and, he still provides a good product to the fans, no doubt about it, with that and the other company. And, it's just hard to draw people, I mean, look at TNA.
Yeah, we Des and I've had many conversations.
They go to these towns with Kurt Angle and Jeff Hardy and go 500 people.
Yeah,
with that in mind,
who the fuck thinks anyone can do good in this?
Right, and they're on Spike TV. They're not on CNN.
Right.
And I'm not behooving Sinclair
right.
at all, but Sinclair syndicated.
That
so.
Was not to knock TNA, and that was not to knock Evolve. It's so difficult to get people to come out.
Right, it's
they want to talk about it.
Yeah.
That doesn't cost them a dime.
Nope. Well, Kerry, that kind of it kind of goes into what another thing I want to ask you about is that, you know, you mentioned, you know, you've been.
But let me just say one other thing. Hold on, along these lines. I went to Madison Square Garden on December 27th to see my beloved friend Kyle Black and Claudio, not to mention Brian, but I was close with Claudio and Tyler, to see them at Madison Square Garden at their first appearance, and it was wonderful. But that's not the point of what I'm saying. The point of what I'm saying is, from 19, I don't know, when I was even alive, but from all through this, when I was alive, through the 60s, 70s, 80s, wrestling was at the Garden once a month on a Monday night, and it wasn't a pay-per-view, and it basically sold out every fucking show. Now, here they come to the Garden, second show of the year. Second show of the year, and it's Christmas week. Now, I'm in the ticket business. Christmas week, when you have stuff running on, whether it's Broadway shows, concerts, that's a good week. Kids are off. They couldn't sell out the Garden.
That's actually kind of what I wanted to touch upon, Kerry, was the fact that you weren't
And it's not because they don't have a good product. They have a good product. They bring the biggest stars in the world, and I like the WWE product personally. But anyway, they couldn't sell it out with all the bullets. And what does this all mean? And I'm raising my voice because there's just a lack of interest in pro wrestling in general. People stay home, the internet, between the internet, YouTube, high pay-per-views, too much exposure, too much television, you know, video killed the radio star.
Exactly, and it's not just wrestling.
Which, by the way, was the first video ever on MTV when they showed videos. It goes on and on. So this is where I'm going. It's hard to get people to come out. I mean, for $20 or something, $20, $25 or sometimes even less, you can come to a Ring of Honor show and see the best wrestling in the world, or some of the best wrestling in the world, when it comes to your town, and people don't even want to get people to come is very difficult. So it's a tough business. Sorry for that rant, boys.
No, it's fine. I mean, it is not falling upon deaf ears. I mean, Des and I have had plenty of conversations, and that was actually where I wanted to lead, was the fact that you are in the ticket business. I mean, you've already mentioned it. You've been a part of the entertainment business, whether in one form or another. You've seen it, and it's not just pro wrestling. It's entertainment as a whole. The whole industry is down, shall we say, and people, you'd have to adapt. And I think Ring of Honor going to Sinclair and going to syndicated TV, that's adaptation, and that's what causes growth in business. So I guess bringing that up, have you, and this, you know, you just kind of ranted about it, but in the overall, you know, when it comes to concerts and stuff like that, why is it that people are not buying tickets and not willing to come out? I mean, even when you have name stars and name talent, you know, even Metallica concerts, stuff like that.
We can talk about the prices of tickets. Yes, base value of a lot of tickets are way too expensive, but there's a trend in the music industry, and for example, Alicia Keys, who you couldn't pay me to go see, but she's a very good artist, just not my thing.
Right.
She's doing the tour now. Now she has tickets that are like, I don't know, top price is maybe $169, but she also has tickets that are like $50, you know, and like, she scales them. Elton John is doing a small tour. Old Elton John, who's still very popular, is doing a small tour now. He always likes to play. He'll have $150 tickets, but he'll also have $30 tickets. And it's like to draw the people in. But I don't think that's the answer. For me, because I'm old enough to remember this, we would go to see Led Zeppelin, or the Rolling Stones, or the Grateful Dead, or whomever we would go to see. And except for seeing their picture in a magazine, or the album cover, Or maybe, in a rare instance, on one of these TV shows that they would have in the 70s, Don Kirshner's Rock Concert, or one of these oddball shows, you would never, ever see these people playing. There was no way. So when you went to the, whether it was the Allman Brothers or the Santana or whoever the hell you went to, it was like, holy shit, we're going to see them live. Wonder what the first, no one knew what the opening song was. No one knew what the encore was. Now, if something plays the first night of the tour, the whole thing's on YouTube. What mystery is there? None. That's what's killed the whole entertainment business, in my opinion. That has hurt it tremendously. You know, there's bands that I still love to go to see, you know, and I will go. And I'll say to myself, I'm not going to watch these YouTube. I want to, you know, and I can't help myself sometimes, you know. And that's, there's no mystery. It's like when the little dog pulled the curtain behind the wizard, that's the story right there. And, you know, it relates to a lot of things. But that's the way, you know, things have evolved. And me having a small tirade about it is not going to change it. But that's the answer to your question. That's one of the contributing factors. The other thing is people don't care as much, I've noticed. You know, that's why you see these older rock bands that keep playing, because this is an era of people my age that liked to go to shows. I don't know if young kids, you know, except the flash in the pan, I'm not talking about a little kid that goes to Justin Bieber or, you know, I got a question for you guys.
Shoot.
Are you guys rock and roll fans at all?
I am for sure. Dez?
Fine. Yeah, absolutely.
Is it fair to say that some of the great anthems of rock and roll are Freebird by Leonard Skinner, Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen, Jumpin' Jack Flash by the Rolling Stones, Sunday Bloody Sunday by U2? Those qualify as anthems?
I would absolutely
agree.
Can
you please name me one anthem since 1990?
Man, that is such a hard question. I mean, because get into that 90s music, and you know, and I'm not behooving anyone's music taste.
Go up to right now. What is it? Say It Ain't So by Weezer?
Oh, God.
Oh, Jesus.
Why did you have
Don't
to go there, Terry?
I'm just saying, you know, now, you know, so like that's, I don't know. So we're into the rock and roll business now, but there's just, you know.
Well, I'm sure a lot of our listeners are rock and roll fans. That's the atmosphere of Ring of Honor. It was a rock and roll show. I mean, they make the commentary about the black T-shirts, you know, and you watch ECW, it looked like a rock and roll show. Hey, you watch Ring of Honor back in the day, like when Special K came out or when Joe came out, that is a rock and roll crowd, you know, cheering. The chant is hit, you know, the champ is here, going with his music. That's pretty much the audience of Ring of Honor.
Well, you know, I don't know how this all ties together, but it gets back to your question about, you know, what's changed. And, you know, are these changes for the better? I don't think so in general as far as, you know, you go anywhere in life, what do people do? They stare at their phone. They stare at their fucking phone.
Yep.
I raise my hand. I'm a conspirator sometimes. But if all you do is look at your phone, and all you do, not all you do, predominantly is tweeting, looking at your Facebook, ooh, someone liked what I said, you're not living. What are you going to write about? What are you going to do?
Well, luckily, Dez, and I'm not going to put you out there, but luckily you don't necessarily have that problem. I'm just saying.
Thanks.
You're welcome, Dez.
So this is... You got me on a rant on modern society. But once again, I am a contributor. I am a conspirator of crime, too. But that's the way it is. That's the way it is, you know. And this is what's, you know, many years from now, no one's going to be able to have a nice conversation like we're having now. Because you're not going to know how.
Well, yeah. Well, speaking of crowds, since we can kind of tie this in, I'm going to say, and Dez, I mean, obviously you covered it then, too. 2010, we started seeing more children at Ring of Honor shows.
Are you guys gonna edit the last 15 minutes because we didn't talk about wrestling?
Absolutely not, Kerry.
We don't edit here.
Yeah, I don't even know how, so that's not a problem. No, but I do think it ties in because, as I was saying, in 2010, and maybe even a little bit before that, you know, I could say 2007, 2008, but in 2010, I really did start noticing a lot more children at Ring of Honor shows. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. You know, I think it's, you know, it's good in my sense because, you know, children are wrestling fans. I started as a wrestling fan as a child, and so did you, Kerry. So how has the Ring of Honor product changed and evolved itself to that new fan base that is putting, you know, getting more eyes on the Ring of Honor product, and a lot of them are very young?
I don't know if it's I don't know how to answer that properly. I don't really think there's been an intent to evolve the product to an age, you know, to a particular kind of market.
I'm not trying to correlate it to like WWE and saying, oh, we're PG now. I am not trying to correlate that at all. I just, I guess it's a very broad question. So,
I don't think that that's considered. I think that what is still considered, and you know, Delirious, who is a brilliant guy, who handles most of the stuff in the back, it's just interesting. We had a nice night last night. We hung out. We watched the Rumble. And he is only interested in one thing, presenting the best possible product that can be presented. And there's nothing like – I don't ever think it's been even considered like, oh, you know, this kind of market or this kind of age. We just want to give the most non-insulting – best wrestling product. And the whole term of Ring of Honor, whether I've been in, you know, when I got involved and through my ownership era and the different guys that were in the back who have come and gone, everybody, my hat is off to all of them because everybody had the same ethic to present the best possible wrestling. And it happened most of the time. You know, you're never going to go 4-for-4 with 3 home runs every game. But, you know, we have a damn good batting average.
Hey, even Kiss took their makeup off for a little bit. That's all I'm going to say.
But that's what it's been about, you know, and it still is. And that's the beautiful part of it. And, you know, we have a lot of good shows coming up. You know, I don't know when this is going to air. But when is this going to air?
Tomorrow, probably.
Well, actually,
Chris knows better than I do.
Well, yes. Definitely. Kerry, just talk away about what's coming up in Ring of Honor. Because we want to know, what is it that Ring of Honor is playing? It's 2013, you know, almost 11 years.
A lot of good stuff coming up. I mean, we have the TV taping coming up this weekend in Baltimore on Saturday, which is always a lot of fun. If anyone's listening who hasn't been to a TV taping in Baltimore, the arena's downtown. It's near the harbor. I'm blanking out. I should know the name of the damn place.
The DuBurns.
Thank you. But yeah, it's a fun place. It's a great atmosphere, and we always get good crowds there. There's going to be some shows coming up. Let me just think for a second. I'm not staring at the internet. There's a show in Cincinnati on February 16th, and that's on a Saturday. Then there is the 11th anniversary in Chicago on March 2nd, and the following day there will be a TV taping, which is going to be really cool to do. We've been going to Chicago Ridge since 04. It's a great building. It's comfortable there. We always have a lot of fun there. And we're excited to be doing a TV taping. You know, it's nice to do it in other spots. There's a show in Asheville, North Carolina on March 30th. That's a Saturday night. And yes. Then there's the big weekend coming up in New York City.
Supercard of Honor 7, which I will be at live at the Hammerstein.
And that is on Friday night at 8 o'clock, and the next day, on April 6th, there is a TV taping, at the upstairs at the ballroom, which you guys know this, but that's the first place Monday Night Raw ever filmed.
Yes.
And so that's, you know, and we're going to Toronto in May, and it's shaping up to be a good year.
Yes, and the last one listed, not to interrupt you, Kerry, the last one listed is Milwaukee. That's a Friday, July 12th. And
yes,
that's the last one listed on the site. So I'm sure you guys you guys know where you're
And I'm sure you guys know this, but today it was announced that Alex Kozlov and Rocky Romero will be appearing in Chicago.
That's right.
And
I'm so excited.
That's exciting to have these guys back. And so there's a lot of good stuff going on. You know, it's been a great year with Ring of Honor. You know, the whole Kevin Steen run has been fabulous. You know, working with Davey Richards continuously and the Briscoes, you know, Adam Cole is amazing. Kyle O'Reilly, Michael Elgin, we've yet to see the best of him. Mike Bennett, Roderick Strong is like, you know, one of the Babe Ruths of Ring of Honor at this point. And I know I'm going to be leaving names out, you know, having Charlie Haas and Caprice and Cedric are a great young tag team, and you know, having Rep Titus and someone's going to be mad that I left out their name, but I'm just going through it real quick. It's still a great era, you know, and you know, guys like Steve Corino and Jimmy Jacobs are just so talented, and having them with company is just fantastic, and it's still a thrill to be involved.
Absolutely. Now, I'm going to throw in a couple names in there. I mean, guys like ACH, Silas Young, Adam Page, a lot of the some of them aren't young in age, but they are the up-and-coming talents on the indie scene. I mean, Ring of Honor is giving them a platform to ply their trade, and I think that's always what Ring of Honor has always been about, in my opinion.
Yes, and there's going to be some surprises coming up. I'm not going to give away anything, but there's going to be some good announcements in the next few days and weeks, so keep your eye on the ROH Wrestling website, and if you could join us at any of these shows, any of your listeners, please do. You certainly get your money's worth when we come to Ring of Honor.
Absolutely. So, Dez, do you have any other questions before I try to wrap this up?
As soon as we get ready to wrap it here, Kerry, you've been very gracious with your time, and we appreciate you talking, taking us through the timeline there for you in Ring of Honor. We really appreciate that.
Well, you're welcome. You guys are knowledgeable, and it's enjoyable to speak to you. I look forward to seeing you, Chris, in New York City, and if you'd ever like to speak to me again, just get in touch.
Absolutely, and as always with all our guests, Kerry, let some of our listeners know, any upcoming projects, I mean, even if they're your own personal projects, obviously we just ran down a lot of Ring of Honor stuff, or where some of them can reach you on, say, on a social network on one of their phones, clearly.
Oh, that's all right. You know, I just gave him the whole nine yards. I'm just looking forward to this, you know, these upcoming weeks and months and these years. And, Dez, it was good talking to you, too, and I appreciate your guys' time.
Always. Thank you, Kerry.
All right. Take care.
All right. We're back here after that great interview with Kerry Silkin. Of course, we appreciate him for his time. Dez, that was a lot of fun. It was kind of, like I said, it was a dream for me to be able to talk to him.
It was very cool because you hear all these stories about, you know, well, not stories, because you were actually there when Kerry Silkin was a big part of Ring of Honor, and he was in charge. He owned the company and he backed them financially. And, you know, Ring of Honor produced some awesome, awesome product. And not to say they still do or they still don't, but they produced some great, great stars, some great, great wrestling, some awesome shows. And it was just really cool to look back at that time in Ring of Honor and kind of look at the how Ring of Honor has matured as a wrestling company over the years. I had a really good time with that.
Yeah, and I really hope that the listeners, you know, I know a lot of you have been indie wrestling fans for a while. And then, you know, some of you have, you know, no, I'm not going to say haven't been indie wrestling fans for a long time, but you just recently started watching Ring of Honor. A lot of you tweet and email us questions about it. And, Kerry, you know, I hope this interview kind of opened up your eyes a little bit to what was the past of Ring of Honor. Because, Dez, and I know that we talked about this a lot with Kerry, but it is something that I have thought of, is that Ring of Honor is a different product. I mean, even, Dez, since you've been watching it since 2009, so you've always seen it within its shall we say, TV age. But during the time, and I know you've seen some of their past DVDs, man, when they had that product going, it was amazing. And that's not saying that it's not amazing now, but it is different. You know, you kind of have to view a DVD product and a TV product differently. There are different expectations, I feel. And I think we definitely got that out of Carrie.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so once again, thanks for listening to us. This has been the Weekly Newscast. As always, we got some stuff that we need to plug. Dez, let the people know what you've been doing.
All right, folks. So AIW's end of what's the pay-per-view coming? Or the show coming up? I suck. Conspiracy Theory. Conspiracy Theory is coming up on February 8th. And I've got a couple Blindside podcasts coming out. I've got one that just was released with Ms. Veda Scott, the lawyer, the woman behind Gregory Iron, and one half of the AIW Tag Team Champions, Hope and Change. So you can check that out right now. It was a really fun interview, and we have a really fun run-in during that interview as well. I'm not going to spoil the surprise. You can check it out for yourself. AIWrestling.tumblr.com is where you can check out that podcast. And I've got another one coming up in the next couple of days before Conspiracy Theory. Also, thingsdezsays.net is my own website where I post things that, quite frankly, weren't good enough to go on other websites. No, not really. It's a much more different thing on thingsdezsays.net. We have some fun, we tell some jokes, and we talk a little wrestling. It's a good time, so check that website out. We've got some new podcasts every weekend. This weekend, in fact, we're taking a look at Bash at the Beach 2000, having a little fun with that. And on Sunday, we're talking to the author of a really great British wrestling book, Holy Grail, The True Story of British Wrestling's Revival. That's an awesome book. Check that out, because you're going to learn a lot on that interview, I promise. And for everything else, you can follow me on Twitter, at Dez Delgadillo.
I also wanted to say I really enjoyed that interview that you did with Johnny Gargano that you released on YouTube, as well as on thingsdezsays.net. Check that out. Dez, you have your own YouTube channel now. You got to put content up.
I'm trying. I'm trying to market thingsdezsays.net by getting it. I know YouTube has like an entirely different audience than my website, so I just want more people to know about what we're doing with, you know, thingsdezsays.net and with ECW's commentary, and just get more people attracted to what we're doing out there.
Well, that's awesome, Dez. Lots of good stuff there, so check that out, thingsdezsays.net. For myself, I do. I had some articles come out this past week. I talked about VWA and all the big names they have coming in 2013, including the aforementioned Johnny Gargano and Blue Ant from Chikara. Lots of other names out there right now. They posted a picture, essentially, of some talents that could be coming in. So check that article out. You're gonna want to watch VWA. That's all I can say about it right now. And I'm not even going to say this was their big announcement. I'm just going to say that they've teased this for a while, and this is all leading somewhere. Somewhere really great for 2013 for VWA. So check that out. Also look forward to a couple reviews, Ring of Honor TV reviews. They are coming back to the website. We're looking into people for that. And I do want to throw out there, anyone, you know, if you have a wrestling blog of your own, feel free to submit it to us, CGSTong at pwponderings.com, or tweet it to me at CGSTong, that's CGSTONG, because we're always looking for new writers. We always want opinion pieces or reviews of everything indie wrestling. So
Think about it, folks. That's what I did, and look at where I am now.
Exactly. Exactly. Unfortunately, you know, things like TNA, WWE, you can submit them as writing samples, but we are specifically looking for indie wrestling. But, you know, that's a small caveat. Of course, we wanna welcome everyone and everyone to try and to check us out. So we appreciate that. So, all right, end of the plugs for that. Dez, thank you to everyone. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you again next week.